This is John W. Whitehead, author of Battlefield America, The War on the American People, bringing you a message about the state of our nation. It's been some 230 years since the U.S. Constitution was drafted and ratified. Since that time, unfortunately so, we have gone from being a nation that took great pride in serving as a model of representative democracy to being a model of how to persuade a freedom-loving people to march in lockstep with a police state. In fact, what began with the passage of the U.S. Patriot Act in the wake of the 9/11 attacks has snowballed into the eradication of every vital safeguard against government overreach, corruption, and abuse. Since then, we have been terrorized, traumatized, and tricked into a semi-permanent state of compliance. The boogeyman's names and faces change over time, but the end result remains the same. Our unquestioning acquiescence to anything the government wants to do in exchange for the phantom promise of safety and security. All the while, our Constitution has been steadily chipped away at, it's been undermined, eroded, whittled down, and generally discarded to such an extent that what we are left with today is but a shadow of that robust document adopted more than two centuries ago. Most of the damage, however, has been inflicted upon the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, which historically served as a bulwark from government abuse. Set against the backdrop of government surveillance, militarized police, SWAT team raids, asset forfeiture, eminent domain, overcriminalization, armed surveillance drones, whole body scanners, stop and frisk searches, and the like, all sanctioned by Congress, the White House, and the courts, and the like, a recitation of the Bill of Rights would understandably sound more like a eulogy to freedom and freedom lost than the affirmation of rights that we truly possess. We can pretend that the Constitution, which was written to hold the government accountable, is still our governing document. However, the reality we must come to terms with is that in the America we live in today, the government does whatever it wants. Freedom be damned. Here's what it means to live under the Constitution today, the First Amendment. It's supposed to protect the freedom to speak your mind, to assemble and protest nonviolently without being bridled by the government. It also protects the freedom of the media as well as the right to worship and pray without interference. In other words, Americans should not be silenced by the government, not at all. To the founders, all of America was a free speech zone. Despite the clear protections found in the First Amendment, however, the freedoms described therein are under constant assault. Increasingly, Americans are being arrested and charged with bogus contempt of cop charges, such as disrupting the peace or resisting arrest for daring to film police officers engaged in harassment or abusive practices. Journalists are being prosecuted for reporting on whistleblowers. States are now passing legislation to muzzle reporting on cruel or abusive corporate practices. Religious ministries are being fined for attempting to feed and house the homeless. Protesters are being tear gassed, beaten, arrested, and forced into free speech zones. And under the guise of government speech, the courts have reasoned that the government can discriminate freely against any First Amendment activity that takes place within a so-called government forum. The Second Amendment was intended to guarantee the right of the people, and I'm quoting here, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Essentially, this amendment was intended to give the citizens in this country the means to resist tyrannical government. Yet, while gun ownership has been recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court as an individual citizen right, Americans remain powerless to defend themselves against SWAT team raids and government agents armed to the teeth with military weapons better suited for the battlefield. As such, this amendment has been rendered null and void. Then there's the Third Amendment, which reinforces the principle that civilian elected officials are superior to the military by prohibiting the military from entering any citizen's home without the consent of the owner. With the police increasingly training like the military, acting like the military, and posing as military forces, complete with military weapons, assault vehicles, and so on, it's clear that we now have what the founders feared most, a standing army on American soil. Then there's the Fourth Amendment, which prohibits the government from conducting surveillance on you or touching you or invading you unless they have some evidence that you're up to something criminal. In other words, the Fourth Amendment ensures privacy and bodily integrity. Sadly, however, the Fourth Amendment has suffered the greatest damage in recent years and has been all but eviscerated by an unwarranted expansion of police powers that include strip searches and even anal and vaginal searches of citizens, surveillance and intrusions justified in the name of fighting so-called terrorism, as well as the outsourcing of otherwise illegal activities to private contractors. The Fifth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment, they work in tandem. These amendments supposedly ensure that you are innocent until proven guilty, and government authorities or agents cannot deprive you of your life, your liberty, or your property without the right to an attorney and a fair trial before a civilian judge. However, in the new suspect society in which we live, where surveillance is the norm, these fundamental principles have been upended. Certainly, if the government can arbitrarily freeze, seize, or lay claim to your property, money, land, or possessions under a government asset forfeiture scheme, you have no true rights. The Seventh Amendment. It guarantees citizens the right to a jury trial. Yet when the populace has no idea what's in the Constitution, civic education, by the way, has virtually disappeared from most school curriculums. That inevitably translates to an ignorant jury incapable of distinguishing justice and the law from their own preconceived notions and fears. However, as a growing number of citizens are coming to realize, the power of the jury to nullify the government's actions and thereby help balance the scales of justice is not to be underestimated. Jury nullification reminds us and reminds the government that we the people retain the power to ultimately determine what laws are just. The Eighth Amendment is similar to the Sixth in that it supposedly protects the rights of the accused and forbids the use of cruel and unusual punishment. However, the U.S. Supreme Court's determination that what constitutes cruel and unusual should be dependent on, and I'm quoting here, evolving standards of decency that mark the progress of a maturing society, leaves us with little protection in the face of a society lacking in morals altogether. The Ninth Amendment provides that other rights not enumerated or listed in the Constitution are nonetheless retained by the people. Popular sovereignty, as it's called, the belief that the power to govern flows upward from the people rather than downward from the rulers, is clearly evident in this amendment. However, it has since been turned on its head by a centralized federal government that sees itself as supreme and which continues to pass more and more laws that restrict our freedoms under the pretext that it has an important government interest in doing so. As for the Tenth Amendment's reminder that the people and the states retain every authority that is not otherwise mentioned in the Constitution, that assurance of a system of government in which power is divided among local, state, and national governments and entities has long since been rendered moot by the centralized Washington, D.C. power elite, the president, the Congress, and the courts. Indeed, the federal governmental bureaucracy has grown so large that it has made local and state legislatures relatively irrelevant. Through its many agencies and regulations, the federal government has stripped states of the right to regulate countless issues that were originally governed at the local level. If there is any sense to be made from this recitation or reciting of the freedoms lost, it's simply this. our individual freedoms have been completely eviscerated so that the government's powers could be expanded. Yet those who gave us the Constitution and the Bill of Rights believed that the government exists at the behest of its citizens. It is there to protect, defend, and even enhance our freedoms, not violate them. It was no idle happenstance that the Constitution opens with these powerful words, "We the people." As the preamble proclaims, and I'm quoting, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do and ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." In other words, folks, we have the power to make and break the government. We are the masters and they are the servants. We, the American people, the citizenry, are the arbiters and ultimate guardians of America's welfare, defense, liberty, laws, and prosperity. Still, it's hard to be a good citizen if you don't know anything about your rights or how the government is supposed to operate. As the National Review rightly asks, how can Americans possibly make intelligent and informed political choices if they don't understand the fundamental structure of their government? American citizens have the right to self-government, but it seems that we increasingly lack the capacity for it. So, Americans are constitutionally illiterate. Most citizens have little, if any, knowledge about their basic rights, and the American educational system, so-called, does a poor job of teaching the basic freedoms guaranteed in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. When Newsweek asked 1,000 adult citizens to take America's official citizenship test, 44% were unable to define the Bill of Rights. A survey by the Annenberg Public Policy Center found that a little more than one-third of respondents, 36%, could name all three branches of the U.S. government, while another one-third, 35%, could not name a single one. Only a quarter of Americans, 27%, know it takes two-thirds of a vote of the House and the Senate to override a presidential veto. One in five Americans, 21%, incorrectly thinks that a 5-4 decision of the Supreme Court decision is sent back to Congress for reconsideration. And more than half of Americans do not know which party controls the House and the Senate. A 2006 survey by the McCormick Tribune Freedom Museum found that only 1 out of 1,000 adults could identify the 5 rights protected by the First Amendment. Blows your mind. On the other hand, more than half, or 52% of the respondents, could name at least 2 of the characters in the animated Simpsons television family, and 20% could name all 5. It gets worse, folks. Many who responded to the survey had a strange conception of what is in the First Amendment to begin with. For example, 21% actually believed that the right to own a pet was found in the First Amendment. Some 17% said that the First Amendment contained the right to drive a car, and 38% believed that taking the Fifth was part of the First Amendment. Teachers and school administrators do not fare much better. A study conducted by the Center for Survey Research and Analysis found that 1 educator in 5 was unable to name any of the freedoms in the First Amendment. In fact, while some educators want students to learn about freedom, they do not necessarily want them to exercise their freedoms in their school. As the researchers concluded, and I'm quoting, most educators think that students already have enough freedom and that restrictions on freedom in the school are necessary. Many support filtering the internet, censoring t-shirts, disallowing student distribution of political or religious material, and conducting prior review of school newspapers. Government leaders and politicians are also ill-informed, although they take an oath to uphold, support, and defend the U.S. Constitution against, quoting here, enemies foreign and domestic. Their lack of education about our fundamental rights often causes them to be the enemies of the Bill of Rights. So what's the solution? Thomas Jefferson recognized that a citizenry educated on their rights, interests, and duties is the only real assurance that freedom will survive. As Jefferson wrote in 1820, and I'm quoting, I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of our society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional powers. From the president on down, anyone taking public office, and I believe this to be true, should have a working knowledge of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and should be held accountable for upholding their precepts. One way to ensure this would be to require government leaders to take a course on the Constitution and pass a thorough examination thereof before being allowed to take office. More important, however, average citizens, that is, you and me, need to learn our freedoms and defend them every time the government violates them. The Rutherford Institute is doing its part to push back against the police state and make the government play by the rules of the Constitution. But we can't fight these battles alone. To join the resistance and help us spread the word, start by liking this video and subscribing to our YouTube channel. Visit our website at www.rutherford.org and check out our library of thought-provoking commentaries, legal resources, and so much more. Subscribe to our email alerts and I will send you my weekly commentary, Rutherford Press alerts, and a weekly rundown of pertinent headlines and news articles to keep you apprised of the growing threats to our freedoms. And finally, if you are able, please consider making a tax-deductible donation to the Rutherford Institute by again visiting us online at www.rutherford.org or donate using PayPal. Your donation allows the Rutherford Institute to push back against the government's power grabs, corruption, and ongoing assaults on the Constitution. Together, we can make America free again.